Hello.
When your mind is... welcome and good evening, Graham. How are you?
I'm fine. I've had a very busy week, very cultural.
Very cultural week.
Well, yeah, and I was going to start with a bit of gossip because I went to... I went to Harrogate Art Gallery yesterday and I picked some good minor celebrity cultural art world gossip, which I was going to start this edition of the podcast with.
I insist that you do.
But I'm not, because the big thing is we need an emergency debate about austerity and the effect on councils and the effect on the arts world, because I'm not sure if you know this, but Birmingham City Council is in such a financial mess.
Yeah.
And there is an argument between, was it badly managed or was it austerity? Well, you know, it's affecting so many councils across Britain, Tory and Labour councils. This is definitely linked to austerity. I never buy it that it's just all down to council incompetence. Anyway, we'll move on from the politics of it. But because they're so strapped for cash now, after 14 years of austerity, they are making 100% cut to the arts funding. In other words, Birmingham City Council is stopping all arts funding. Not half of it, not a quarter of it, all of it. This means there'll be no more money for Birmingham Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah.
No more money for Birmingham Royal Ballet, whose director is Carlos Acosta, the famous dancer. Who recently did a ballet based on the music of Black Sabbath. There'll be no funding for the smaller groups. And the city as a whole, unless somehow the private sector steps in to financially support all arts in Birmingham, and let's face it, that never happens anywhere in the world, you'll always get private sector support for some type of arts and at some level, but you never get blanket private sector support for the arts. It just never happens. So goodness knows what's going to happen there. I mean, Birmingham is an important city.
Graham, is the indication at this stage that this is for 1 year only, this desperate measure?
Well, no. The problem is, like, so, for example, North Yorkshire Council, which Harrogate is part of, and York is part of North Yorkshire, although it's got its own city council. Well, North Yorkshire Council, it's had 14 years of austerity as well, even though it's run in a pretty efficient fashion, has to be said, by a Tory council. But despite their efficiency, they are looking at finding a £30 million shortfall in their budget this year. They're looking at almost the same next year and then almost the same the following year, because the effect of austerity rolling forward isn't, it's not just that it's cost, it's also the inflation and the high energy bills, which have compounded the problem. And on top of that, despite what, so I think one Tory leader said that austerity was over, but it isn't. They haven't loosened the purse strings for the public sector as a whole, for the welfare state or for local councils, whether they're Tory, Labour, Lib Dem, no overall control. So when you're budgeting, if you look forward and you can't see any more money coming in, you have to start making decisions now, because otherwise you'll be in an even bigger problem in the future. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's definitely not good.
I mean, the brutal question to ask is, what is the alternative to cutting the arts? And I'm not saying, I'm playing devil's advocate in asking that.
Well, the alternative is that austerity didn't need to keep on happening. Austerity is a political choice, not a financial choice. The reason for austerity in the first place, as given by the Cameron Osborne government in the coalition with Nick Clegg and Lib Dems in 2010, when there was a narrow win for the hung parliament, when Gordon Brown failed to win, the justification that was that there was a national deficit problem, a national debt problem, but the national debt right now is 96%. Now that's higher than it was in 2010. And at no point in 14 years of austerity has the government managed to get the national debt below about 90%. And 90%, by the way, is not an unusual figure for national debts in the Western world or the modern world. That's a fairly average figure in general. The sort of countries that struggle financially have national debts of 170%, 180%, 200%. So there was no debt crisis. You have to look responsible as a government, otherwise the financial markets will get spooked and your borrowing rates will go up. But as long as you look sensible and not completely profligate, there's a big leeway to have a big debt. America's got a huge debt and no one's going to call that in. So basically, they need to stop austerity, like they said they were going to do. Otherwise, the arts is going to be in real trouble, because it affects the arts council as well. And arts council as well, they cut the arts council budget, so the arts council cuts its budget to places all over Britain. And Harrogate Theatre was one of them that failed to get an arts council support. So on top of that, it's also facing a huge financial problem, in that part of its revenue comes from booking all the acts that play Harrogate Convention Centre and the Royal Hall.
And
it makes a lot
away.
Of money each. Mm. Yeah, that's been taken away by North Yorkshire Council. And the fact is that until Harrogate Theatre was given that job of booking the acts and running the box office for those two major Harrogate venues, those places, in terms of entertainment, arts and culture, were in a pretty bad way, because the councillors who ran those venues had no arts experience and could not make a success of them. So they gave it to Harrogate Theatre precisely because Harrogate Theatre had a track record of independently booking successful arts programmes and making money.
Why has
out
that
of it.
Changed, Graham? Why has that policy changed?
Well, I think the council's figuring that it's a sort of subsidy to the Harrogate Theatre that they allow to take this money for booking acts in those venues when those venues aren't even owned by Harrogate Theatre. So I think they've thought, well, let's bring it all into one tent. Why have we got Harrogate Theatre involved with this?
I despair at the fact that they've actually came up with what was a really good system, which had led to unquestionably improved quality of concert performances and other events at both of those venues, done with the experience that Harrogate Theatre has with the team that runs Harrogate Theatre, an extremely experienced team, utterly in touch with arts and what people want to see, really good judgment on that. I despair of these things. It's yet again ultimately an anti-arts policy that keeps, I could bang on and on about why arts is undervalued. I don't understand, in the times when people go on about mental health, mental health, mental health, mental health, and arts is one of the things that will help with mental health, why this is not appreciated and understood. It is making people better. You go to a show, you feel better. It's not complicated. I might not like a tribute act show, but people feel better. I don't, but most people do.
I admire your passion, Charles.
I can't see why is that link never made? It's also educational for all ages. What at national level has stopped that being joined up thinking?
Well, we've been run by government for 14 years, which values money and politics above everything else.
But they are losing money.
The arts always comes proper.
Graham, this is not a great government of financial triumph by comparison with the success of the business world in America, which is rising highest of all in the Western world. We are doing the opposite. We have gone into recession. So a government that places all that value, and even that they can't get right.
Yeah, you're right. But let's get away from the politics for now, because you're beginning to sound like the Lee Anderson of the arts
no,
world.
No, Graham, that's a shock. I'd never any comparison with Lee Anderson. No, that's really unfair. Now, I go back to the question, how, as an alternative to what's happening in Birmingham, do you finance an alternative solution?
Well, there is no way, because you either get sponsorship from major companies, but that only goes so far.
Yeah.
Or you get more money from the government, or you let the whole thing sink. Then eventually, if there ever becomes cheap property to do independent arts in, you would get independent arts groups forming. But the trouble of Britain right now is that the property is also expensive. So in the 1970s, when Britain's economy was in the doldrums, there was lots of problems. The arts sort of flourished because Britain's relative poor economic performance compared to Europe, which is why we joined the EC in the first place, because we were lagging behind. It meant that property was cheap. So you get all these great people like Derek Jarman, squatting, which is now illegal, or living in really cheap property and creating their own arts. So it's quite a vibrant scene. But nowadays, there's no... The rules and the laws pertain against independents doing things. The price of property and energy bills stops independents doing things. So we're in the perfect financial squeeze for the arts. The arts is getting hit from all directions simultaneously. But anyway, this all goes back to sadly, the government's role. You know, I've been reading Rory Stewart's Politics and the Edge
Yes.
memoir of his time as a MP and junior minister from 2010 till 2019. And he's very damning of Cameron as much as Johnson, actually.
Quite right, too.
Not on a personal level. He doesn't seem to be that personal about things. Rory seems to judge things by the end result of what these people are
Quite,
doing.
but
And
the
also
end result was exit.
their
It was
integrity
exit
and
from
their
exit
honour
Brexit.
and their honesty. So that's what he's really about. So he's got like Cameron, how he promoted Truss and Patel and Johnson, and he started austerity and he did the referendum for Brexit. So he's quite clear that Cameron was part of the problem, really. But there's one thing that's interesting. When Liz Truss was the Secretary of State at Defra, and Rory was a junior minister under Liz Truss, Liz Truss, as soon as they got into their new roles, Liz Truss says, "I want you to write a 10-point plan for the national parks," because Rory was in charge of national parks. And so Rory says, "Oh, yes, I'll get straight down to it. I'll visit all the parks. I'll analyse the situation. I'll have a plan ready for you in 4 weeks." And Liz Truss says, "You have 3 days, Rory." She says, "We need to get it into the Daily Telegraph on Friday." And so Rory says, "Well, if you give me a couple of weeks, I might come up with a good plan." And she goes, "Come on, Rory. I can write it myself already. Make it 8 points if you can't make it 10. 10's better, though." And so Rory says in his book, which is a very well written book, he says, "The details, it seemed, mattered hardly at all to Liz, nor did their implementation, for this was only a press release masquerading as a plan." Now that's about 10 years ago that happened. So you can see the whole drift of the government, even under Cameron, was towards playing to the gallery, playing to the media, not actually caring if policy had any effect on the ground or not. And the arts, which isn't just talk, the arts involves doing. Otherwise, there is no arts. You can't have an arts plan where nothing happens.
Exactly.
And so the arts just were always going to come a cropper under this government.
What else could come across proper? Why is it always the arts?
Now, it's everybody else. I mean, to be fair, social care has
Social
come a cropper.
Graham, I was going to retract my point because actually, if one looks at it, social care is beyond all doubt a huger crisis across all boundaries. I would like to wish that arts is for everybody, but and I wouldn't want it to be considered elitist. But obviously, social care is something that. Is of huge concern all around. So I absolutely would think that's a fair point you've made there. I agree with that.
Anyway, I think with enough politics, let's move on because
But it's difficult because you've got me going. You've got me frustrated.
and that's why I used the appalling Lee Anderson comparison, which obviously is
I have
ludicrous.
never ever suffered such a sling of an arrow in ever. Now I am curious to know about I'm going to pick. Okay, I'm interested to know working with Harrogate Community Radio in a music event last week at All Saints Church in Kirkby Overblood, the kind of event, Graham, that will still go ahead no matter what happens with funding.
Well, it relies on money, and Kirkby is a very wealthy village now, 4 miles from Harrogate. And
Absolutely.
it didn't used to be quite so wealthy,
It
but
is the home
Harrogate's
of which
attracted
famous
so many new
ex-footballer?
in. Oh, actually, is it Eddie Gray?
Correct.
Wow, I guessed right there. That's good. Ex-Leeds United in Scotland, obviously. Wow, that's
I've been
good.
doing a lot of overblowing tonight, Graham. So anyway,
Oh.
right. So there you were. You were working with Harrogate
Well,
Community Radio. And what happened?
Alan Smythe was there at All Saints Church in Kirkby Overblood, which is a
Yeah.
gorgeous church. And
It is.
he was there to do the sign for the event. And basically the event was like an offshoot from Vinyl Sessions, which Colin Payne, a Darley-based businessman, organized for 4 years, which I took part in as the sort of music talk expert, and
Yes.
with a few other volunteers. And no one got involved with it was paid a penny. In fact, we didn't even take any costs for the money we spent doing it. But in the 4 years, we raised about £20,000 for the Friends of Harrogate Hospital charity, which went to patient care, not to like some bureaucracy, because there's no bureaucracy in Friends of Harrogate Hospital. In one event, we had Ken Scott turned up, the producer of Supertramp and many famous bands, including engineering producing for the Beatles. And we had him doing a talk with me interviewing him at the Vinyl Sessions event in Harrogate about David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust album. But usually we just pick on one classic rock album. We'd play the whole thing on state-of-the-art but vintage hi-fi systems from the 60s or 70s. And people would sit in rows of chairs, having been lectured by me for 15 minutes about the meaning of the album. They listened to, yeah, which obviously they love. And we'd play the whole album from start to finish.
Yeah.
They'd have a couple of beers and that'd be it. So a couple of figures, Colin stopped doing this during lockdown because his business took over. But so a couple of figures involved, they decided to do their own event at Kirby Overblow.
Mm.
And that's where we had the Mike Oldfield Tubular Bells night four
Ah,
years
yes.
ago, which attracted 200 people
Yeah.
to listen to Tubular Bells in a church. But so two or three figures from the Vinyl Sessions got together to do it again. Now, I said to them at the time when I was doing my talk, I said, well, this is a bit like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. I've got back together again, but only with Crosby and Stills.
Yes.
And I said, like, I'd rather have the original lineup, quite frankly, which I suppose is a bit rude. And the event was a huge success in terms of the money it raised for local charities and for money it raised for Harrogate Community Radio, which, by the way, hosts this podcast and is run entirely
It
by
does. It
volunteers,
does.
as entirely independent and does not take sponsorship and advertising.
No,
It's
no.
totally old school independent. So we raised money for them and for the church. And it was a hugely enjoyable event.
So
But sorry, Charles.
I was intrigued as to actually what the event involved this time. Wasn't
Now,
Crosby, Stills and Nash without Crosby, Stills and Nash? Was Graham Chalmers and who?
Music Mike, as we call him, is a guy who's obsessed with old school tape technology
Ah.
in reel to reel. And he and his committee of music selectors picked
Yes.
26 tracks or thereabouts from 1959 to 2006 and played them on this huge system with massive speakers. When I arrived, I thought Black Sabbath were about to come on stage. They're just absolutely ginormous. And this is like in the middle of a church. And the problem was that I didn't quite get the concept. And it turns out there wasn't a concept. They
There
just
was no
got together.
concept.
No, they picked loads of tracks that they individually liked and just chopped them together. So I said to Matt, was like, I really enjoyed that. It was a successful event, but I didn't quite see the musical point. So, and also, it's such a posh church. And the people who were at the event, mainly but not solely from Kirby Overblow, we're such a well-heeled crowd. And they were all very nice because I was chatting to them afterwards. And they're a nice bunch. But it was a bit like if I decided to organise a punk gig on the set of Brideshead Revisited. It was like the poshest, sort of like, it wasn't Vinyl
Was everyone
Sessions.
Too polite to actually say, what have we just been experiencing here?
It was like, well, they all had a great time because they chatted a lot and drank and ate very fine cheese, but yeah, no, but no, no one did actually say, you know, what was the point in the music?
And well, why was it in a church?
Because, like most churches these days, Charles, churches have had to become almost like professional venues just to like financially prop themselves up, and also
have
to
you
like
been into St.
bring the
Michael's Church,
community in.
Markington, recently? The word professional, with my involvement as church warden.
I know that the problem is that the average turnout there is about 20, which doesn't sustain a live music venue in general. So that was the problem. But yeah, so it's partly to bring a community in to raise money for the church, and also the great spaces for arts events or churches, as you know.
Graham, I absolutely, and interestingly, Ripley All Saints Church, there's a meeting on Tuesday night. About what it's called reordering, but effectively what it's looking at is the possibility and likelihood now of removing pews so that you can have more flexible seating, so that you can have more events going on in the church. And that's probably the way that, you know, churches are looking at going now. That's the reality, that they are, you know, broader based community
You've seen
spaces.
many great gigs. Well, yeah, of course, you've seen many great gigs at York Minster.
I have absolutely, and I went to see Sinead O'Connor playing in a cathedral in Manchester, which I shall never forget that experience. Sinead swearing royally in a Manchester cathedral. That was novel, and she kept apologising for swearing and then swearing again. It was a wonderful night all round.
Well, she was a one-off, wasn't she? And also on top of that, I like to think that if churches have to change to survive. They're really good. I've always thought that the best music is spiritual. So it's gone from being a place of spiritual worship to being, wait a minute, it's still a place of spiritual worship. It's just that the worship now involves music rather than necessarily religion. So it's a neat, it's almost a neat fit.
One of the most gorgeous sounds one can hear is going to Fountains Abbey and listening in the dark there, or walking up to the wonderful sounds of just choral singing just echoing through that building. It's majestic, it's magical. And that's the power of a voice, the sweetness of tone, all these things. Even if one is not of faith, and that one can be of spiritual uplift, and that is exactly what music can do. And I think you're right that churches are the most beautiful places to hear music in, unquestionably. I absolutely agree with that.
That's such a nice thing to say, Charles, which is why I think we should switch to something a bit more profane, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. Shall we switch to a film full of bad language?
Of course, let's do it.
So this is Wicked Little Letters, which
Oh, yeah.
is a classically English film. So you have a high-class English cast, or British cast, I should say, because it includes the Irish actress Jessie Buckley, as well as Olivia Colman, who has to be in every single British comedy, Joanne Scanlon, Timothy Spall, and that's just some of the cast. Now it's set in Littlehampton, which is in West Sussex, set in the 1920s.
Wait a minute. Littlehampton
Based.
sounds a bit rude already.
Well, you're quite right. Now, actually, interestingly, that was not one of her swear words. And it's
Really,
kind of,
okay.
it's not even really worth the spoiler alert over this, because it doesn't take very long to work out who actually is sending these letters. But it's based on a true story. And I think about 2017, a book came out drawing attention to this story again. And Johnny Sweet, the comedian, thought, oh, that'll make a good film. So, what's interesting with this is just two contrasting reviews. Guardian, 2 stars. Peter Bradshaw's review loathed it, said it was pointless making a
I
film
saw
like
that.
this, really. Seaside humor. Why are we still making films set in the past when we should be making urgent films about the situations now? And on the one hand, I can see what that is, but excuse me, but haven't we just been talking just recently about a
least,
series of British filmmakers who've been doing exactly that? We've focused on them
Well, yeah, I mean,
recently on this podcast.
we've already got a zone of interest. We don't need like every film to be zone of interest.
The Last Oak, Ken Loach. That's just recently. Anyway, we'll probably have to come back to the subject because we're into the last minute. But in fact, we will have to come back to it later. What's interesting, though, the second review, written by a woman, loved the film, 4 stars. I think that probably is in The Observer, and gave a completely different attitude to both why this film is significant, why it's humorous, why it works. We will come back to it next week to discuss it in more length. But it's interesting. The debate will then be where does swearing fit in films? Has that changed? If you actually have a film entirely based around swearing, is that limiting? Well, just ask Joe Pesci about his role in Goodfellas and the use
Well,
of swearing in
yeah,
there. Very
the king
different
of
form.
film swearing is Scorsese.
King
Films
of,
not only have lots
absolutely.
of swearing, they've got some classic swearing moments. They're not just like throwing them out
Yeah.
for any old reason.
You've been listening to the podcast Two Big Egos in a Small Car. Your hosts were Graham Chalmers and Charles Hutchinson. This was a Baltic sub-production.